Okay, this is the hour we'll take your phone calls and stories with Richard Dolan. So get ready on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. First of all, Richard, where can people get your works?
Well, I've got two primary sites. I would encourage them to check both of them out. The blog site that I have with my co-author Bryce Abel for AD is called afterdisclosure.com. It's a very active site. There's new material going up every week. We've got great articles from ourselves and from contributors, so other people. And then my publishing site, where I've got all my books, all my personal stuff, is called keyholepublishing.com, just like looking through a keyhole, keyholepublishing.com, and you can go there. And I've got YouTube clips and articles, and the introductions to all of my books are there, and a lot of other things.
Okay, let's go to the phones. You ready?
Yes, indeed.
Corky in Rochester, New York. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Corky.
How you doing tonight, George?
Great. All is well. Thank you.
It's my belief. You know, I'm not trying to put anything down anybody's throat, but just it's my belief that the government would never tell us if there is an alien race that we're in contact with, because I believe the first two questions the ordinary people would ask, not the scientists, the average citizen would ask is, where are you from, and do you believe in God? Because the world is wound together in a religious belief, if they said, well, there is no God, there would be absolute chaos, because most of the world population believe in a punishing God. If you do something wrong, you will be punished. And it would just create total chaos, because if there's nothing to worry about anymore, then people don't have to go without anymore.
All right, Richard,
well,
go ahead.
Good question, yeah. Corky. By the way, I'm in Rochester, New York, as we speak, so we're in the same town, my man.
That's right.
Well, anyway, these questions are quite germane, and I think you're absolutely right in the sense that the government will never voluntarily give up this information. They have way too much to lose. But one of the reasons that I think disclosure is going to happen anyway is because they are not the only part of this equation of secrecy. There are really three major variables here. You've got the secret keepers themselves, okay, so they have no incentive. We understand that. But then there are these other beings. Let's not forget them. They're here. Maybe they have an agenda, and it's possible that they at some point might force this open. But then the real variable, that I would encourage everyone to remember this, the real variable is us. We, the people, society, we are changing so dramatically. Every year we've got new abilities to communicate with each other, to share information. Do we honestly think that, let's say, look ahead 50 years from now, what is our society going to look like technologically? How will we be able to communicate and share information at that time? Well, I don't know any better than you do, but I can assume that the world is not standing still at 2011, and we're going to have capabilities that are going to force this issue open. Something like WikiLeaks never existed a little more than 5 years ago. It couldn't exist, but it does now. So something's going to happen to force it open. When it happens, will there be panic? Yes, I think there will be some panic by some people. There'll be people running around in circles, pulling their hair out of their head for a little while. But the bottom line is, you can't panic forever. People have jobs, they have families, they have obligations. And at a certain point, they're going to have to just suck it up, get it together, and move on. And that's what's going to happen. And then, of course, those people may be traumatized for a while, but guess what? They'll have children. They'll have grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and those people are going to grow up in a very different world with a very different point of view, and they will adapt.
All right, very good. Next up, we go to Los Angeles, John's turn on Coast to Coast. Hey, John, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I've been looking, you know, at the UFO phenomenon since about the 70s, and I'm becoming a little bit, I hate to say it, but I'm becoming more a little bit more skeptical as time goes by. But I was wondering if your guest has looked into two cases, either the Billy Meyer case or the Ed Walters case in Gulf Breeze, Florida, and if he's come to any conclusions one way or the other about those two cases.
Yes, indeed. Well, let me just say, the Billy Meyer case, I really should have written about in the second volume of my history, and I thought about it, and I I'm going to deal with that one in much more detail for my third volume of history. I'm doing a trilogy, history of UFO in the modern era. So I'm going to hold off on that one. The Ed Walters case, that's the Gulf Breeze, Florida case that was going full guns in the late 80s, early 90s, and it is absolutely my opinion that that case is legitimate. There is a concerted effort to debunk Ed Walters, most famously with this so-called Gulf Breeze model of a UFO craft that was found in the attic of the home where he used to live. The thing about that is that that was absolutely a setup against Ed. And we know this because the model was, we discovered that that was made with architectural drawings by Ed, because he was an architect. But the problem is that the architectural drawings were from after the time that he moved out of that house. Someone, in other words, had sifted through his garbage, put a model together, planted it in the attic. It's convoluted, and I've described this in detail in Volume 2 of UFOs in the National Security State. But the bottom line is that that was planted there, and it was intended to be found for the sole purpose of discrediting him. There's been a great deal of photographic analysis done on these Gulf Breeze photographs by Dr. Bruce McAbee, optical physicist, and other people. There is no evidence that these have been hoaxed. And on top of that, we have to keep in mind that Ed Walters is not the only witness to what was happening in Gulf Breeze. Gulf Breeze has had witnesses, hundreds of people who described, many of them said they saw the exact same type of object that Ed had photographed. So the Gulf Breeze case is a very, very tricky one. It's not hoaxes. The best that you can make of it, if you want to go in the conventional route, is that it was a military type of technology, perhaps. But even that really, I think, is a stretch when you look at the sum total of events that happened there. As I study more and more UFO reports, I think that what impresses me is the overwhelming quantity and quality that I'm faced with in terms of the bottom line is this. I don't know for sure, 100%, that UFOs are from ETs. I do know that UFOs are real, that they represent technology that is not supposed to exist, but yet it does. That's the bottom line. We need to start from that and then look at some of the more difficult nuances of this. Is it ours or not ours and so forth? And that's an important question, too. But we need to start with the recognition that this is a technology that's real. It's being held back from us by the powers that be in our own world, and we need to break that secret so we can move on to where we need to be as a society in the realm of truth, not the realm of falsehood.
Richard, you've looked at so many cases, so many documents. What does this all tell you? What do you think is really happening? Visitors, physical visitors from other planetary systems, dimensional, what are they?
Yeah, that's a great question. I ask myself this question frequently, George. I do believe that the extraterrestrial component of this is real. Now, when I started out in this field a little over 15 years ago, I will admit that that was, once I got on board and realized that this was a real phenomenon, my assumption was that it had to be ET. That certainly was the assumption of many analysts back in the 50s and 60s, even within the military. But of course, our understanding of reality is I think, a little more nuanced than it was back then. But I do think that there's an extraterrestrial component. There's certainly now evidence for an abundance of life in our universe. The more that we're learning, the more we're finding out. So it really doesn't strike me as outrageous that another civilization could have arisen somewhere else and gotten to the breakthrough point of advanced computing intelligence and biotech capabilities that would allow them to have interstellar travel. I think we're getting close to that point ourselves. However, I would say that there are elements of this phenomenon that are beyond a mere extraterrestrial type of explanation. Somehow I believe that dimensions matter. In other words, what is a dimension? Well, I'm not a physicist. I'm not Michio Kaku. It'd be hard for me to tell you exactly in terms of mathematics and physics how dimensions work, but we do know that contemporary physics allows for multiple dimensions of reality. And I do think it's very likely that these other intelligences have an ability to manage their way through dimensions of reality in a way that we don't. So they could be ET plus interdimensional in some way that we don't yet grasp. And then there are other possibilities as well. You've got the time travel possibility, and you've got maybe a homegrown variety of breakaway civilization that's been so far removed from our own that we think of them as the gods, but in fact maybe they were humans that just discovered a great secret thousands of years ago, and maybe that's what this is all about. You know, I entertain these possibilities as well as anyone else does. I don't pretend that I know all the answers, but I think the ET explanation is definitely in the mix.
Okay, let's go to Dan, Peeksville, New York. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Hey, Dan.
Yes, thank you for taking my call, George. Richard, I disagree with the I love the Guy Hotel memo there, but it's not the same as the Aztec, because my research has shown that the Aztec case is one craft, 100 feet in diameter, with 14 or 16 bodies, whereas the Guy Hotel memorandum is three crafts, each being 50 feet in diameter, with 9 bodies.
Right.
And also, as far as the blackout suits, it only says it's similar to the blackout suits. It does not say it's for the same purpose.
No, good point. And in fact, you may have missed me earlier when I pointed this out as well.
Yeah, I did. I pointed it out later.
That the Hotel memo did not correspond with what some researchers have said about the Aztec crash. I happen to think that the Aztec crash may well have happened. I don't think that it's fair to characterize that as an absolute hoax, even though a lot of researchers have done so. That's not my opinion. And so I think that the Hotel memo, you know, there are things about it that make me think it's tapping into the Aztec story one way or the other. It's tapping into that.
Yeah, but you still have a different description, though. You still have the different crafts, one being as opposed to three, and the size is different from 100 feet.
Well, yeah, but that could also be the case. I mean, Silas Newton.
Silas Newton. There's something else I found out. Leo Gebauer may have not been a fraud after all, and there's been some writings also. Now, Silas Newton may have still been, you know, a scammer, but
right.
Gebauer might have been several people, not just one.
I think that's right. In fact, Gebauer, who is known as Dr. G by Scully, seems to have been more of a composite of a number of sources that Scully had rather than one person. So, yeah, I think that there are reasons to look at the Aztec crash in a very positive light. That wasn't my intention in some of these things I said about the Hotel memo, just that the Hotel memo refers to Aztec. The part about the test suits and the pressurized suits, or what appeared to be that, I would think that might have been from Newton, who gave a talk on March 8th, 1950 in Denver. And to me, the timing is such that that seems to be the primary source of this FBI memo, which was only written 2 weeks after Newton gave his talk in Denver about all of this. So that's all I'm saying. I think he probably would have gotten a lot of things wrong. Why wouldn't he? You know, it's not like he had the internet to refer to, or you know, stories get passed around, and he very likely got certain things wrong, and that got transmitted into this FBI memo.
What do you think will be the next breakthrough in the ufology?
Well, I think you know, I mentioned WikiLeaks once or twice. I think WikiLeaks and the idea of WikiLeaks is absolutely crucial for our world today. We all recall about 5-6 months ago, maybe less, Julian Assange mentioned that there were UFO references in some of the cables that he had access to. And the few that I've seen are really not all that impressive, admittedly. But it is my belief that there is UFO data floating around within the classified world, absolutely. And I really think, George, it is a matter of time before there is a massive file dump of this type of information that's going to come out there. The issue then will be the U.S. government's going to do what all the other governments do when WikiLeaks releases something. They're going to say, that's a fraudulent document. they're going to deny its authenticity. But the problem is, when you get a massive file dump it's going to be a very difficult thing for them to fight, I think. So I think a WikiLeaks type of event, whether WikiLeaks itself or a copycat organization, or the next big thing, I guess, is what you asked. Oh, so maybe I'm getting ahead of myself. I don't know if WikiLeaks is going to happen within the next year
for the
UFOs. Gosh, I don't know. I guess probably when my next volume of history comes out, that'll be the next big thing. That'll be in 2 years.
Okay. And I would guess you'll pick it up from 92 on.
Oh, you know it. I'm working very, very assiduously on that now. I have a lot of the research is all put together, and I'm trying to write this. It's going to be a big, fat book, probably a good 600 pages, I'm guessing. It'll cover from 92, exactly right up to the present day. But whatever day I finish that book, the book will cover up to that, and maybe I might even speculate a little bit beyond that. But it'll be a 20-year period of history that I cover.
Let's go to Christian in Los Angeles. There you go, Christian. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hello, guys. I have a question for you, and that is right now, I'm really diving into the Kennedy assassination because, as you know, the 50th anniversary is coming up in 2 years, and I'm going to start Lamar Waldron's Ultimate Sacrifice. My question is, and I've known a lot about the UFO field for a long time, Roswell. There's a lot of sensational information on the Internet, and some of the information I've read concerning Roswell and Kennedy was, for example, the powers to be of the elite, whoever they may be, the Bilderberg Group, for all we know, apparently say, from what I've read, that JFK was threatening that once he was in office in his second term, that somewhere around in his second term, he was seriously threatening on making a complete disclosure to the American people on everything that he knew about UFOs. In other words, he was going to essentially override the CIA and the National Security Agency and pretty much open the doors completely to the American people about everything that the government had known about, let's say, like Roswell and these crashes. And they found out about this, and they said, no, he's got to go. He's a threat. That's one of the so-called theories involved in the Kennedy assassination.
Indeed it is.
And I wanted to know, how do you feel about that?
I think that that really could be very close to the truth. I haven't really talked a lot about Kennedy and UFOs, even in my first volume of history. I didn't talk too much about it. I didn't have access to a lot of that information at the time. Some of the disputed released documents, the Majestic documents, concern John F. Kennedy. I think many people have seen the document relating to Marilyn Monroe, mm-hmm. Which was a CIA document dated one day before she died, and she was murdered, certainly. This is a document that talked about Dorothy Kilgallen, the journalist and friend of Marilyn Monroe, talking about Marilyn's dissatisfaction, her knowledge from John F. Kennedy about space beings and all of this.
Let's you finish that, Richard, when we come back, and then we'll take the final calls on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to talk about an incredible after-death experience. It is truly remarkable. And then we're going to have open lines on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Richard, did you want to finish up on that story at all?
A little just about Kennedy and UFOs. Let's think of it logically. The UFO problem is the elephant in the living room that no one ever talks about, which means in American history, the UFO problem has got to be something of prime importance in the administrations of, you know, Truman, Eisenhower, Kennedy, and beyond. Has to be. Can't not be. And so there's got to be a backstory to the presidency of John F. Kennedy relating to the UFO phenomenon. To me, that's a given. I think very good reasons to think that John F. Kennedy's assassination could have been connected with this phenomenon. Of course, Kennedy was assassinated in large part, I think, because he stepped on so many toes.
Yes.
So many groups that had motivations for getting him out of the way, and the UFO part of it is simply one of several of these aspects. I just wanted to close on this by saying that on the website of majesticdocuments.com, Bob and Ryan Wood, there are a number of alleged Kennedy documents that in my estimation, I think some of these, maybe all of them, look legitimate. And I would encourage people to go and take a look at them. Go to majesticdocuments.com and just check them out and see for yourself. There's some brief analysis that the Woods provide on this, but you can just read the documents yourself and see the burned originals as well.
Okay, back to the phones we go. We'll go to Topeka, Kansas. James, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hey, James.
Hey, how's it going, George?
Great.
I had a comment and a question in regards to Stephen Hawking's comments in regards to aliens. He says Christopher Columbus first landed in America, which didn't turn out too well for Native Americans. And I think he's comparing that to, you know, as if ETs would visit Earth and whatnot. And I mean, I kind of agree with that. I mean, you would think that their motivations would be nefarious. They would be looking for something. So, I mean, should we have the nukes aimed at them? I mean, you don't want to go hit them right away, but I mean, you want to be prepared. I mean, not that we'd stand a chance. How do you think we ought to handle that contact, the major contact? Should we have the nukes aimed at them, ready to crack over the head and dig around?
Absolutely important question. I agree that this is something that is highly contentious among people who think they all know the answers. And I don't pretend that I know the answer, but there are people who say, no, that's ridiculous. Anyone who's mastered interstellar flight has figured out how not to destroy themselves, how to live peacefully and cooperate. And then, of course, you have other people who claim to have contact with some of these beings and claim that they are they're benevolent. Now, that's great. But on the other hand, I do not think that advanced technology is a slam dunk that you've suddenly got peaceful intentions. I mean, look, we've got advanced technology, and we're not all that peaceful compared with, you know, earlier ages of human history, right? There's no reason at all, in my view, why an advanced species anywhere else wouldn't be just as predatory as humanity is, in which case then we would have a lot to worry about. And I also feel that just in terms of common sense, we would be very foolish if we did not take precautions to deal with that. My own sense of the matter is that there are multiple groups here observing us right now, some of which might be more or less benign, others maybe not so benign. Look, I think we're of prime interest because of our own development at this point in our history. I think we're about to go through a major threshold, and anyone who's got the ability to monitor us and to visit us is probably doing so right now. And so they probably don't all have a unified agenda. And I do think that if it's the 1940s and, you know, you're in a world dealing with propeller airplanes and newly discovered nukes, but you still and taking baby steps with that, and then you discover that here's a species that's got technology that you can't even fathom. Well, of course, that's going to generate a certain amount of panic, and it will spur your own secret military developments. It does seem to me that there is possibly a kind of secret Cold War, maybe hot war, going on right now. So this scenario, should we be aiming nukes at them or weapons, it's very possible that human military groups are, in some way or another, trying to find a way to engage what they may consider to be a hostile threat. Now, that's only speculation. I guess I would just leave it by saying it's possible. It's possible also that we have benign groups out there that are in the mix as well. And how all this plays out, your guess is as good as mine.
Richard, the belief of UFOs widespread throughout this planet, or are some areas a little more into it than others?
Well, good question, George. No, my feeling is that people from around the world have come to accept this reality. It's taken a little bit of time. Maybe it was different in the 1950s or 60s. But who on Earth doesn't know about UFOs? Who on Earth hasn't even heard of Roswell at this point? You know, everyone has heard at least something about it. And I think my own sense, I know folks from different parts of the world as well, and it seems to me that the belief is very widespread. I think it would be interesting to see a comparative, like a sociological breakdown or like a worldwide version of a Gallup poll done globally to see how it breaks down nation by nation. I don't know how that would break down, but I suspect that there's widespread belief everywhere at this point.
Well, let's go to Stockbridge, Michigan, not far from Lansing. Fred, take it away.
Yes, hello, Mr. Norrie and Mr. Dolan. I'm so happy to finally be able to speak to you. I just make these real quick questions. The first one is, are you familiar with James E. McDonald, the astrophysicist from Arizona?
Yes,
who was also sure into UFO research. And the reason I brought him up is because my personal, just checking into this, I just found that his investigations into those RB-47, Lacey 17, July 17th, 1957.
Yep.
Okay, I found that to be one of the more intriguing reports. Also, I know there was others where they used similar sort of aircraft because of the personnel involved and the witness and the radar confirmation, et cetera. Also, I wondered if you had any ideas to where you would think what technologies from these supposed craft might now be incorporated into our culture, you know, like microwave or, you know, fiber optics, et cetera.
Okay. Two very, very good points. Thanks for mentioning them. First of all, regarding McDonald, the man is a real hero to most of us who look into the UFO phenomenon. You know, McDonald was a first-class scientist who had the guts, not as a retired academician like a lot of other people do because they don't want to lose their jobs, but as an active professor and atmospheric physicist, went right out on the line and slammed his fist on some tables and made waves and did not back down. James McDonald was a lion in this field during the time that he was active. And his analysis of the RB-47 case from 1957, as you point out, that was first rate. In fact, that's really one of the strongest and most compelling UFO cases out there. It's not very well known, so I'm glad you brought it up. But it was a military case in which there is an extended, more than 30-minute radar and visual, multiple radars, as I recall, tracking of an object, I think over a course of about 800 miles of an object that defied any kind of logical explanation whatsoever, and it was taken quite seriously. Regarding the second question you had, what technologies active today that we've got that might have derived from ET, that's a little trickier for me to answer. There are the claims that of Philip Corso in his book, The Day After Roswell, that fiber optics was one of them.
Chips, right? Computer chips?
Better integrated circuits, I think,
yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. High tensile fibers, which I mentioned earlier in this show. Corso made that claim as well. I don't really know. I think anything and everything possibly could be influenced. The thing is, it's not that we're duplicating ET technology necessarily, but that the way that I see it is that having access to the technology can give you ideas. If you can't duplicate the materials, you can at least understand new concepts and make dramatic improvements over things that you already have. So it's very difficult to prove this, too, because private industry is, well, it's just that. It's private, and it's not amenable to FOIA inquiries. So that when you're looking up the origin of this or that patent, you're not necessarily going to be able to get the honest or full information on that. So I don't know how to answer that any better than what I just did.
Richard, how would you equate the UFO community today compared to what it might have been during the NICAP days?
Well, I think in the earlier years, it was a more even despite the fact that there was no internet, I think in some ways it was more unified than it is today. Think of it this way. There were, you know, a few major organizations. That was about it. And there were splinter groups coming up here and there, of course. But of the major groups, if you wanted to be a serious UFO researcher or investigator, you could join NICAP or APRO.
Mm-hmm.
And in the in the 70s, it could be MUFON. They argued just like we argue today, but there was a certain culture that I think they all shared, a certain attitude that was commonly held. And what happened, I think, is that with the advent of the internet, late 80s, early 90s, all of that exploded. And what we've had now is, anyone, literally any person who's put some thought into this can put their ideas out there and can be read by thousands and even millions of people. I think that's all for the better. What it's done is it's made our field absolutely wide open and very difficult to sort of characterize. It's also had a couple of negative effects, I must say, in the sense that there's, you know, a lot of a lack in many cases of real critical thinking on some of these matters. You get, I call it now the Facebook phenomenon of people copying and pasting every rumor that they hear. So there's, I think, a lot more rumor mongering even today than there was 30, 40, 50 years ago.
And they believe a lot of them.
Yeah, they do. I mean, look, there's reasons to be very suspicious of our government. So I'm not saying that the rumors are that you shouldn't be suspicious.
Unfounded.
But, right, what we have to remember, the thing that I think, if there was one thing that I would really ask people to do more, it's investigate the sources of anything that you read a little more carefully before you paste it onto some other message board so that some other groups of people can read it. In other words, know your source, understand your source, and don't be afraid to do a little bit of investigation on these things. As it is right now, there's just, I think, a very great amount of uncritical acceptance of a whole bunch of things out there that it's not helpful. It's not helpful. If you can't separate the wheat from the chaff, then that means the actual good information gets lost in the shuffle. There are a number of writers out there. I'm not going to mention names, but I think that there are a number of people who are guilty of just, you know, wanting the publicity and just spreading the latest and the greatest rumor that they hear out there.
Good point. Let's go to Las Vegas. Bobby's turn on Coast to Coast, west of the Rockies. Hi, Bobby. Bobby? Well, Bobby gave
maybe
up.
Maybe not.
And maybe he went back to the tables. Who knows? Russ in Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Russ.
Hey, yeah. You had mentioned something about the extraterrestrials possibly being extra-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine you may be familiar with the concept of ascension.
Yes, I am. There's a lot of folks talking about ascension. It's particularly related to, late 2012 on the solstice. It's not something that I think is an easily provable type of statement. If there is a massive ascension on December 21st, 2012, then I guess we'll know for sure, won't we? I'll tell you this. Look, I have spiritual orientation in my own life, and I believe that you and I and everyone listening has a soul. This is real. When this physical body of yours dies, I do believe that we're going somewhere. Now, where exactly we're going, I'm not as certain about as maybe some other people are, but I think that there is a dimension of our reality that is beyond this physical. If we're dealing with ascension, if that's what these, what we call UFO beings are, well, the only question I would have is, you know, they certainly seem very physical much of the time, and how is it that they go in and out of our reality in that manner? Not really clear to me. But look, it's a very, very complex universe, I think. As one scientist put it, more complex than we're able to imagine. And I think that's something to keep in mind.
Okay, next up we go to Les in Memphis, Tennessee.
Hello.
Hey, Les.
I know. Hi, you doing all right?
Yeah, thanks. Mm-hmm.
I know I'm preaching to the choir, literally, but I thought I'd read some scriptures. These are from Moses, the book of Moses, and he's speaking with God. And God says, "And worlds without number have I created, and I also created them for mine own purpose. And by the Son I created them, which is mine only begotten." And he goes on to say, "But only an account of this earth and the inhabitants thereof give I unto you. For behold, there are many worlds that have passed away by the word of my power, and there are many that now stand, and innumerable are they unto man. But all things are numbered unto me, for they are mine, and I know them."
Well, it's, thank you for sharing that. You know, Christianity Islam also, in the Quran, similarly, makes the same type of statements about Allah having created many worlds. So I think it's not against the Christian creed or Islamic creed or really any of the major religions that I can think of to say, no, that there's no life on other worlds. I think it can be very much in line with one's spiritual and religious belief system. So thanks for sharing that.
Okay, let's got about a minute or so left. Richard, if you would, once again, tell us where we can get your books.
By all means. Well, I would say Keyhole Publishing has all the books that I publish, that I write. I also publish, I'm a small-time publisher, and I have other books, including by Richard Souter, Underground Bass Specialist, for example, keyholepublishing.com, or afterdisclosure.com, which is the blog site that Bryce Zabel and I run. If I have a second, George, I just want to let people know that I will be appearing at a really neat conference in Albuquerque, New Mexico, at the very end of April, called Wake Up Now. It's in Albuquerque, New Mexico. It goes from April 29th to May 1st, 2011. Google it. Look it up. If you're in the area, go check it out. I'll be there.
All right. Very good. Richard Dolan, his latest book, AD, After Disclosure. Don't forget, we've got special open lines for you on our next Coast to Coast show, so don't miss it. For Dan Colanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.